This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you for today and indeed for the rest of the week as well. Just a few of your comments, but before we go to them, just to remind you, it is a Tuesday, which means that our Community Garda information slot is coming up in around about 6 or 7 minutes' time. Garda Grainne Doherty is with us this morning, and she'll be making some appeals for information, updating us on some previous appeals, hopefully, and having a chat about some issues which are important to An Garda Síochána in Donegal at the moment, and some issues that you might want to bear in mind as well. So that's always an interesting listen. That's the Community Garda information slot. That's coming up, as I say, in around 6 or 7 minutes' time. Just a few of your comments in the meantime. Why do the authorities not help honest people like your caller David and his neighbour Lawrence? It's totally disgraceful. To have it repeated with every flood is heartbreaking for this householder. He just sounds at the end of his tether. And indeed, you could clearly hear the frustration in David's voice. Caller says, building on floodplains is never a good idea. Now, I don't think, in fairness, David and his neighbours have built on a floodplain. Their houses are on a hill. I mean, what is happening is the water is flowing down the hill and is going into their homes and going into their gardens. The reason it's going into their homes and going into their gardens, presumably, is because the drainage on the hill and the culverts and the drainage system that is there is not strong enough to actually take the flow of water. So it isn't as though they have taken an area which is a recognised floodplain and built houses on it, knowing that there is a risk that area is going to flood and there's nothing can be done about it. They have built the houses on a hill, so I don't think you would regard that as a floodplain. Now, also, a caller says, I was wondering what the public thought on the findings of the American Congress debate on UFO and biological non-human entities, stating that we're not alone and haven't been alone for a long time. If you have any thoughts on that, by all means, get in touch. I mean, it's an interesting one, certainly. And it's one we're going to have, discussions on in the future. Caller says, now, earlier on, I did say I wouldn't be calling Twitter X. I would continue calling it Twitter. Caller says, good man, Donal, I still call the Snickers bar a marathon. Fight the power, y'all. Nice. Yeah, indeed. And you know what you and I should do? The Troglodytes Anonymous. We two of us should get together. You know what we should do? Get together and have a lovely big packet of juicy opal fruits. That's what we should do. Starburst, you say? What is this starburst you speak of? Opal fruits are made to make your mouth water. Donal, an interesting one for you, and this is a serious one, actually. I'm a carer in a nursing home. I would know all my patients quite well in terms of their medical history, etc. However, when it came to ringing an ambulance for an elderly patient at the weekend, and I was asked questions on what medication they were on and what their medical history was, I was clueless and speechless. I wonder, is anyone else in a similar situation? It got me thinking about elderly people living on their own. Should we create a leaflet of our details and leave it, say, on the fridge or somewhere convenient in case of an emergency? A very good idea. Absolutely would endorse that one. I was recently in a situation between 2018 and 2020, both my parents were very ill. And in both cases, we had to call ambulances for them. And I was up and down the road quite a lot, actually, spending weekends looking after my mum in particular. And yeah, we did have a sheet that had all the drugs and all the details. And that was to hand in case we ever needed it. And we did. And there's also, I know there's bracelets on the market as well, where you can get bracelets that will have information on them as well. And I'm actually beginning to wonder, in this day and age, should there even be some sort of a bracelet with a barcode that could be just scanned and read? Now, I know there's talk of electronic patient records. What I would love to see is eventually, and I know there are debates about GDPR and there's lots of debates, but to my mind, this particular issue transcends all that. If each of us had some kind of an identifier, be it a barcode, that we could, particularly in the case of older people or people with needs, that we could have it on a bracelet or have it on a brooch or have it on a pendant that goes around someone's neck and it's got a barcode, so that if they're in a hospital or if they're in a GP surgery, all you need to do is get out a mobile phone or whatever, hold it over the scanner, bang, and then you have the details on a screen, and everything is laid out clearly before you, be it allergies. I know we do have to be asked the questions because people need to double check and triple check and quadruple check. And it's always interesting when you go to hospitals, and I'm no stranger to it myself, and you're asked the same questions. Confirm your name, confirm your date of birth. Is this your mobile number? Yes. Who's your GP? You know, and a lot of that is, you know, confirming as well, and that does have to be done. But yeah, absolutely, I would agree that, you know, the more information is available to paramedics and to doctors and to people, particularly in the context of an emergency department, absolutely the better. Now, before we go for a break, I just want to remind you briefly of our competition. Next week is Heritage Week from the 12th to the 20th of August. It goes Saturday to Saturday. Create your own personalised schedule of events by going to heritageweek.ie, click on the My Heritage Trail and celebrate our traditions, skills and practices. Now, we do have two vouchers to give away, worth around €90 each potentially. They'll allow you free access to some of Ireland's finest heritage sites, and you don't have to travel too far to visit some of Ireland's finest heritage sites, let it be said. All you have to do, based on the three clues I'm going to give you, is tell us where I am speaking about this morning. This house was very prominent during the famine. It's located in Dunfanaghy, and it's known as the Blank House. What is the name of the building to which I refer? Text your name and your answer, please, to 086 60 25,000. Our Community Garda slot, as we said, coming up. And also coming up, indeed, our bingo numbers. So grab your books, grab your pens, and I will hand you over to Canis.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. It is, as we said, the Community Garda slot, and we're joined in studio this morning by Garda Gráinne Doherty. Gráinne, a very good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Donal.
Now, let's just look at the sheet we have in front of us, and we'll just press a button there. A number of issues to discuss this morning, and sadly, we begin with a fatal road traffic collision that occurred on Friday evening.
Yeah, so Garda, you're investigating a fatal road traffic collision that occurred at Ranney, Kerrykeel, in the early hours of Saturday the 5th of August. This single vehicle collision occurred shortly after 3:30 a.m. when a car collided with a pole on the roadside. The male driver of the car, aged 19 years, Connor McGinley, was sadly fatally injured during the collision. A passenger who was travelling in the same vehicle remains in hospital receiving treatment for non-life-threatening injuries, and we hope that they have a speedy recovery. Garda, you're appealing for any witnesses to this collision to come forward. We appeal to any road users who may have travelled on the R246, so between Kerrykeel and Milford that morning, between 3 and 4 a.m, who had a dash cam, to contact Garda. And anybody with any information is asked to contact Milford Garda Station on 915-3060, the Garda Confidential Line on 1800 666 111, or any Garda Station.
Now, a week ago today, on Tuesday, August the 1st, there was a collision in Buncrana for which you're looking for some information.
Yeah, this collision involved two vehicles, and it occurred on the Cockhill Road in Buncrana on Tuesday the 1st of August in and around 5:05 p.m. So the driver and passenger of one of these vehicles were taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive treatment for injuries they sustained, none of which are believed to be life-threatening in nature. We're appealing to anybody who may have travelled along the Cockhill Road who had a dash cam around that time. We're asking them to make that footage available to Garda. If anybody witnessed the collision, we also ask them to contact Garda in Buncrana on 074 932 0540.
Now, looking at the next item on our agenda, again, Buncrana, criminal damage at Lisone Avenue in Buncrana. Tell us more about that.
Garda in Buncrana, they're investigating a criminal damage incident. This happened at Lisone Avenue at approximately 9 p.m. on Friday the 4th of August. So a rear upstairs bedroom window of a house was broken. It's believed that a stone was thrown at the window, causing it to smash. We're appealing to residents, really, in that area to make contact with Garda if they observed any suspicious activity in that area that night. Now, I'm aware Garda have spoken to some of the residents already, but just if anything comes to mind, you know, since they were talking to the guards, if they could make that information known to guards in Buncrana. If anybody can assist with this investigation in any way, we ask them to contact the Garda in Buncrana on 932 0540.
I know where I went wrong, and it was my fault, not yours. There was another road collision in
Pumpkin. There was, yeah.
Right. You should have told me that. Yes, that's exactly where I went wrong. Sorry, I'm all discombobulated this morning.
You're
right.
You're
I do
okay,
apologize.
You're okay.
So we'll go back to we're still in Buncrana.
Still in Buncrana, yes. So this is another road traffic collision. This happened at Lower Main Street, Buncrana, in the early hours of Sunday, the 6th of August, in and around between 1:30 a.m. and 1:45 a.m. So three cars were parked at Lower Main Street, Buncrana. They were damaged when another car struck them. The driver of this car did not remain at the scene. So we're appealing to road users who have a dash cam again, who were in the area of Lower Main Street between 1:15 a.m. and 2 a.m. last Sunday morning, to make the footage available to Gardaí. If anybody observed this collision, or if anybody has any relevant information, we ask them, as always, to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932 0540. The Garda confidential line also, in relation to any of these incidents, their number is 1-800-666-111, and they can be contacted. And as we said before, when you contact the Garda confidential line, you know, you're put straight through really to a messaging service. You're not obliged to leave any of your personal details. You just leave whichever information and a voice message that you want to leave, and it's totally confidential.
Now to Milford and criminal damage that took place over the weekend.
Yeah, so this incident happened in Kilmacrenan between 9 p.m. on Saturday the 5th of August and 10 a.m. on Sunday the 6th of August. So a van had been parked up overnight. So between Kilmacrenan Health Centre, I believe it's known locally as the dispensary, and the entrance to Abbey Village. When the owner returned to their van, they discovered that the windscreen had been shattered and the lock had also been tampered with in the van. So no entry was gained, nothing stolen from it. So we're appealing to anybody again who may have observed any suspicious activity in that area between Saturday night and Sunday morning past to make contact with Gardaí in Milford on 915 3060.
Two letter Kenny now, and some criminal damage that took place at some point over a 4-day period at the start of last week.
Yeah, so this between 7 a.m. on Sunday the 30th of July and 3 p.m. on Wednesday the 2nd of August, a patio door to an unoccupied property at Ard Lonan there on the Long Lane, Letterkenny, was smashed. Entry wasn't gained to the house. We're appealing to residents in that area to contact Gardaí if they recall having observed any suspicious activity in that area between those dates. And again, if anybody can assist us with any information, we ask them to contact us in Letterkenny on 9167 100.
Now, something we discussed earlier in the programme, actually, we spoke to Pádraig Kennedy in Donegal Town, but the theft of this wooden frog sculpture from Rosslyngan Woods.
Yeah, this was only recently carved, I believe, this wooden frog sculpture. So it was stolen from Rosslyngan Woods, Donegal Town, between Thursday the 3rd of August, at some stage after 6 p.m. and 9 a.m. on Friday the 4th of August. So Gintas, G-I-N-T-A-S, carving is engraved or burnt into the sculpture. So this theft, it's understandably caused a great deal of upset locally. You know, these wooden sculptures have been a big talking point in the area, and they're there for people of all ages to enjoy while spending time in this beautiful outdoor setting. So we're eager to progress this investigation, and we appeal to anybody who was in that area, the area of Rosslyngan Woods, between Thursday evening and Friday morning, who might have observed any activity that seemed out of the way, to make contact with Gardaí. If anybody has any information in relation to the current location of this sculpture, we ask them to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530. And we're hopeful that we will get some leads in relation to this. I mean, it's quite a big sculpture, you know, it would stand out a mile. So we're hopeful, and we know that somebody has information in relation to it, and we ask them to come forward.
Now, a story that the newsroom obviously was tracking on Friday and through the weekend as well, a planned operation by Ballyshannon-based Gardaí and two significant arrests in West Donegal.
Yeah, and look, it's always nice to get an update too. You know, we have featured a lot of the appeals in relation to a number of these burglaries on the weekly slot here, so we just wanted to give everybody an update, you know. And this, following a planned operation by Gardaí and Ballyshannon, two males were arrested in relation to an ongoing investigation into a number of burglaries. These burglaries occurred in West Donegal between January and August of this year. So on August 4th, a male teenage juvenile and a man aged in his 20s were arrested on suspicion of committing a number of these burglaries in the Kilcar and Ardra areas of West Donegal, and a number of items of stolen property were also recovered. The man, aged in his 20s, he has since been charged to appear in court. A file will now be prepared for consideration for admission to the Gardaí Youth Diversion Programme in relation to the juvenile, and investigations are ongoing.
Now, moving on, and a question that came in last week, a caller asking, could you ask the Gardaí about how legal electric scooters are on footpaths? My wife and I were close to being knocked down twice on Sunday last on the main street of a town in Donegal. We phoned the Gardaí, who told us they have no power to stop these scooters. Now, can you get some clarification on this? Now, it may be a matter of when this question came in, because I know very recently there was legislation enacted on this, wasn't there?
There was, June, actually, very recently indeed, yes. The Road Traffic and Roads Act 2023, it was just enacted in June, passed there, June 23. So one of the most significant provisions in this Act is the resolution of legal barriers to e-scooters. This Act introduces a new class of vehicle called Personal Powered Transporters, or PPTs. E-scooters, they're a regular part of our streetscape, and we'd just like to let your listeners know that these are not yet legal to use on public roads. Regulations can now be commenced to classify e-scooters as PPTs, and this allows the Minister to specify appropriate power, speed and weight values, along with other technical and usage requirements for e-scooters. So until these regulations are in place, e-scooters will remain illegal for use on public roads. Once these regulations are in place, those who do not comply with them will be, they'll still be illegal to be used on public roads if they don't comply with the regulations. The technical e-scooter regulations must, under EU law, be notified to the European Commission for review to ensure that they comply with single market rules before they come into effect. So this is known as the TRIS process. This process takes a minimum of 12 weeks. When the TRIS process is successfully concluded, the regulations can be introduced. This will most likely be towards the end of this year, end of 2023. So compliant e-scooters may then be used on public roads. However, the use of e-scooters on footpaths will still be prohibited, so they can't be used on footpaths at that stage even.
So at this point in time, if a complaint is made with regards to their use on a footpath, Gardaí can act?
Gardaí can act, most certainly, yes.
I was actually in France just a couple of weeks back, and I saw a single, it looked like a wheel with two little peddly things coming out of it, and there was someone on it. And they must have, I don't know if their feet were strapped onto it, but all it was a person standing up with a little wheel underneath him, and he was zooming down a footpath. It was one of the most amazing things I've seen, and it's only going to be a matter of time before it comes in here, but I was thinking, how can anyone stay up on that yoke? You wouldn't actually know there was a vehicle there until it looked, if you were looking at a certain angle, it just looked like it was hovering along the footpath. It was the strangest thing I've seen.
Yeah, well, look, well, I suppose now there's so many advancements in different types of transport, and I suppose this is why this Roads Traffic and Roads Act 2023 was enacted, to clarify the position for people too, because as we said, look, they are they're a regular part of our streetscape. People see them in use. So I suppose the regulations are there now to put them on some sort of a legal footing. But as for the caller's question last week, in relation to them being used on the footpath, they can't at present be used on a public road or on a footpath. And even when these regulations do come into force at the end of 2023, these e-scooters will still remain illegal for use on footpaths.
Gartha Grainne Doherty, thanks very much indeed. Just before you go, Grainne, as well, obviously, one of the big stories in the news today is the death in Carrick and Shannon in Leitrim, tragically, of Detective Sergeant Deirdre Finn. I know she would have had a lot of friends in Donegal, in Ongartha, Síochána. And we heard Brendan O'Connor, who's obviously the president of the GRA, and he was speaking, and he would have known her very well. So obviously, all of our thoughts are with the wider Ongartha, Síochána family today, because that is a huge loss, obviously. And I know a lot of Gartha in Donegal and further afield are feeling that today.
Thank you, John, and of course my condolences, and condolences on behalf of my colleagues also are with Deirdre's family and with her close friends and her colleagues. You know, and Garda Síochána times is like one big family, and you know, even going through Templemore, people stay in contact, people would tend to stay in contact over the years, and I know that Deirdre would have a lot of colleagues within the force spread right across the country. So our thoughts and our prayers are with Deirdre's family at this time, and you know, just an absolute tragedy, Donal, really. Very, very sad news and hard news to take in.
Grainne, thank you very much indeed. Obviously, all the stories up on the news pages of our website, highlandradio.com, and you can obviously look back on the slot on our YouTube channel, and you can look back on our social media pages as well. So, you know, there is plenty of opportunity to revisit all the items on the Gartha slot. But for now, Grainne, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donal.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. I just want to remind you that on today's edition of Hours to Protect, Donna Marie talks to Dean Gillespie. He's the chair of Ballybuffet and Stranorlar Tidy Towns. You might have noticed a splash of colour when passing through the Twin Towns, so tune in, prepare to feel inspired and see how you can get involved in your area. Hours to Protect is broadcast every Tuesday at 12:30 on the airwaves and on the playback section of our website, highlandradio.com. And also, you can get it on hours2protect.ie along with a number of other programmes from other radio stations across the country which are doing a similar initiative. It's part of a broadcasting, it's not BAI, it's another organisation, the name of which I have completely forgotten, is the Commission the Man. Thank you very much indeed, Carolyn. Commission the Man is the name of the governing authority on that particular initiative. Now, let's talk about alcohol, because recent figures have shown that alcohol-related liver disease is rising across most counties in Ireland. And I'm joined on Zoom by Paula Leonard, who is the CEO of the Alcohol Forum Ireland. Paula, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. And worrying figures, Paula, published recently, particularly worrying for Donegal.
Yeah, look, what we had published last week from the Health Research Board was sort of a county level breakdown that looks at the data in relation to alcohol over the last couple of years. I think it's really important to note that there is a COVID context here. And what we had seen during COVID was some people cut out their alcohol use, some people cut down their alcohol use. But unfortunately, the statistics right across the globe are that those who were drinking at home began drinking in a much heavier and more problematic and hazardous way. And usually the knowledge within sort of liver specialisms would suggest that it takes numbers of years for us to see that sort of presenting in hospitals. But it's presented in hospital rates and death rates right across the globe in pretty alarming figures. We're seeing more people die as a result of alcohol-related liver disease. We're seeing more people hospitalised. And, you know, Donegal, we do know that within the treatment data, that still the most common drug that people are looking for treatment and support around is alcohol. And that continues to be the case in Donegal over numbers of years. And, you know, last year alone, the Donegal HSE Drug and Alcohol Services would have had 467 cases treated for alcohol dependency in 2022. So that's a really high number. And what the HRB information is telling us last week is that people aren't coming to look for help until it's very late and the problem has developed. And what that means is that they're a more complex presentation, that they require a high level of support, that they could be within the service for longer. So I suppose the key message to anyone listening today is, look, if you feel like you're on that slippery slope, you don't have to wait till you hit rock bottom. You don't have to wait till you're in crisis. You know, go to your GP, go to the Drug and Alcohol Services, ring us here in Alcohol Forum Ireland, where we have a variety of supports and services for advice and support and information. And you don't have to be the person either who's got the issue with an alcohol or other drugs. If you're a family member who's concerned about somebody, there's support and help and advice out there for you, yourself, in your own right. And we have a new family support service. Tom is sitting in the room next to me and has already started seeing clients. He's just a few weeks into that post, and that's for families right across Donegal. So, you know, I think the figures are worrying, but Donegal has really good supports and structures in place. And I think it's about sending that message out to people rather than frightening the life out of people and, you know, looking at all of the doom and gloom. You know, but Donegal, I suppose we had the highest rate of hospital related admissions in the country for alcohol last year. We also had the highest rate for first admissions to psychiatric hospitals and units for alcohol related diagnoses last year. So, you know, these are without, you know, a pun, these are quite sobering statistics that we need to think about as, you know, not just as a charity dedicated, but as a community and as a society and what we do about it.
And as you said, it's both sort of physical illnesses, be it liver related or whatever, and a psychiatric illness as well. Donegal, Leitrim and Sligo high up there as well. Now, when it comes to the physical illnesses, it's interesting that Sligo and Leitrim had the lowest rate per 100,000 of alcohol related hospitalizations, whereas Donegal and Louth had the highest. Now, I don't know, is it just coincidence that they're all sort of border counties? Or, I mean, has anyone looked into the factors that may be behind that?
Yeah, look, I suppose I was talking to some colleagues around this since it was published, and we can't sort of make those great claims in terms of causality. But we do know, you know, that the border counties have been neglected historically in terms of investment for support services. So, for example, in Cavan and Monaghan, over the last few years, we've developed the first under 18s addiction service for those two counties, and there never was one. So the border counties have been neglected historically in terms of investment, and we're seeing some rebalancing of that in the HSE investing in new services. You know, when you talk about the statistics and more people coming for alcohol use disorders and coming for drug treatment in Donegal, you also have to bear in mind that we have a really good service here. We have short waiting times. We have outreach services. The HSE run them across the county. So there's numbers of factors, I suppose, that you need to think about in terms of those statistics. So those statistics can be both a good and a bad thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fact that there's such high numbers means that people are being seen and that help is being provided. And, you know, when you talk about the psychiatric admissions for alcohol related causes, I think it's worth noting or mentioning that Donegal is the only county in the Republic of Ireland where mental health services and alcohol and other drug services are still integrated. So that isn't the case anywhere else. So there is greater collaboration and working together. And I think that's of interest when you read this, you know, this profile that's been launched by the HRB again last week. So, it, you know, it's complex, but I suppose what is simple is, you know, people need to be seen. People need to understand that there's help and that there's hope and that there's support out there. Those are the things that are simple to do. But in relation to the hospitals, we had a hospital event looking at the burden that alcohol puts on hospital services in Donegal at the end of March. And very much the hospital staff who attended were saying, this isn't just about liver. This is about liver, but this is also about the cancer rates in this county. This is also about, you know, gastrointestinal disease. This is also about emergency department presentations. This is about alcohol-related accidents, alcohol-related violence. So the burden is spread right across the hospital service. And as a county, we really need to look at that. And we need to realise that when we did a survey, which was published last year, one in four people in Donegal described the fact that they felt that they lived in a home where somebody was drinking problematically. So that's one in four of our adults in this county are saying, we have an issue with this and we need to talk about this and what do we need to do about it? We need to look at how available alcohol is. Is it available to our young people? How are young people getting their hands on it? What are our parents telling and teaching and understanding about the need to protect the developing teenage brain, which is not developed till it's 25? And for parents, I says the message really is delay, delay, delay as long as you possibly can for young people. And that's not a moral issue. That is an utterly scientific issue because alcohol is really damaging to young people. So we need to all work together. It's not just my job. I mean, it is partially my job, which I love. But it really will take a whole society approach to change the culture. And I think your point about the border county piece, when it came to our survey in the border counties, and we had the same in a survey in Cavan Monaghan, we found that there's a really low level of support for public health alcohol measures. So, you know, people weren't that supportive of minimum unit price. They weren't that supportive of ban on alcohol advertising. And if you think about it, when I go out my gate in the morning, my nearest pub, my nearest off licence, my nearest club, my nearest hotel, so anywhere I can get alcohol, is on the other side of the border because I live just on the border. So we have to think about that. What does minimum unit price difference make in my life? We need to see it introduced in Northern Ireland. So there is a cultural thing here too that we have to think about and do something about. And, you know, I think agencies are ready for those conversations. And over the next few months, we're going to be seeing the launch of a new project that we're funded through the Department of Health that will be working in Letterkenny as one of 12 towns around the country over the next 3 years to sort of tackle and develop a plan on this.
Is part of this, part of these high figures down to better reporting, better detection? I mean, we know that Alcohol Forum Ireland has its roots partially in the Northwest Alcohol Forum, as it was initially chaired by Dennis Bradley all those years ago, and we're going back, what, 15, 20 years almost, I suspect, at this stage. And I attended the initial launch down in Bundoran myself, actually. Is it that because we had the Northwest Alcohol Forum, now Alcohol Forum Ireland, headed up by yourself, that effectively there is better detection, better investigation and better reporting in Donegal, and that it isn't that Donegal is much worse than everywhere else. It's just that the extent of the problem in Donegal is more visible, and it also exists everywhere else, but they don't see it as much.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to take credit for, you know, the better reporting. I think what the figures are based on is really every service that gets funding from the HSE, they have to report on figures, you know, in terms of treatment and the people that they see. And yes, you're absolutely right. Donegal is really good at that. So submitting those figures nationally to the HRB has been slower in some counties. And, you know, the figures are improving all the time. But what we know, and I mean, if we were to really sort of start to challenge ourselves, what we know is, for example, 80% of alcohol use disorders are missed in GP settings. So GPs are really busy, they're overstretched, there isn't enough of them, but we're not seeing screening for alcohol use within GP settings. They would argue because they don't have the time. They've also prioritised that. They launched a new guide for GP settings last year nationally. So in terms of reporting, we know that there's under-reporting. We know that people don't get to help and that they aren't asked to get to help until it's crisis or end stage. So what we're saying is, you know, GP mightn't have time if you go in with a sore foot to ask about your alcohol use. But if you were to sit in front of your GP and ask for help around your alcohol use or to do a test to see, you know, do you need on or referral, they would do that. And they absolutely would do that. But yeah, statistically, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. And I mean, Dennis is still involved. You're absolutely right. Your name was on a report I was looking at recently when I was looking at, you know, sort of the importance of media and the importance of population awareness and why we need to do it. And we need to keep doing it. So I'm really grateful to be on here this morning and chatting about it, because we need to not be seen as the nanny state. We need to be seen pro safer communities, pro health, you know, pro children and childhood and families, and getting the message out there that we do have a problem. We do have an issue in this county and in this country. And before you go to bed tonight, three more people will have lost their lives in this country as a direct result of alcohol use. And we can't stick our head in the sand about that. We need to have these conversations and we need to talk to people. But there is stigma. There is silence. People are ashamed to go and look for help. We do need to build a visible recovery community in Donegal. There's a gang of us going off into Derry for, you know, a recovery walk and to start that movement here. That's on, I think, towards the end of September. But if anyone is interested in sort of supporting and volunteering and being interested in being part of building a visible recovery community in Donegal, I'd really love if they'd give me a ring and let me know, because there's definitely room for volunteering as well. People in recovery are making huge contribution to this work all across the country. You know, we have recovery groups, cycling groups, walking talk groups, pop-up cafes. We're starting to see that. And I think while we've done a really good job in Donegal, I think that's something, there's still a bit of the shame and stigma and not talking about it that we need to poke a stick at. And we really need to say to people, in fact, there's nothing to be ashamed of. If you're in recovery, it's something to be really proud of and celebrated.
You mentioned media there. Caller asks an interesting question. Is the Alcohol Forum challenging the indirect advertising of alcohol in the soaps every evening before the watershed? They say the soaps promote the bright side of alcohol. They never show the effect of alcohol on people and society. I remember having a conversation with someone once and noting that EastEnders or Fair City or Emmerdale or Coronation Street, we can all name the pubs. But if you look at the Australian soaps, Your Neighbours, Your Home and Aways, it's coffee shops.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. And we did campaigned for and have continued to campaign for the both the adoption and now the implementation of the Public Health Alcohol Act. And the Public Health Alcohol Act does include some provisions in relation to what's called that, what your listeners describing is called product placement. Do you know what I mean? That you see somebody drinking a pint or you see somebody in a pub. And very much you're right. The offerings that we have in terms of those light entertainments in this country and in the UK are very much based around soaps that are based in pubs. That is an issue. However, Donal, not to disagree with your listener, but right now young people are spending most of their time on their phones. And alcohol companies understand that really well. And what we're seeing is, you know, algorithms, aggressive promotion, aggressive marketing of alcohol in the digital media space. And there is a movement at a European level to look at how we can stop not just the alcohol piece, but the tobacco piece, the gambling piece, all of those sort of unhealthy commodities and how they're being pushed on our children. In our cinemas, in our film and, you know, magazine, but ultimately the biggest place where children and young people and young adults are being exposed to that right now is on your phone. And, you know, governments are arguing that it's very hard to monitor, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible to introduce regulation of those. And it's something that we would really welcome.
Yeah. To my mind, one of the more important things that have happened in recent times has been the growth in zero alcohol beers. There was a time when there was one zero alcohol beer on the market. I think it was called Buckler, and it was vile. Now, pretty much all, it was horrible. Pretty much now, all the major companies have their own zero, and they're all very, they're good. I mean, you know, they're quite good. I mean, you know, and I will go out, and I am much more likely to drink a zero in a bar than I am to drink an actual alcoholic pint at the moment, largely because I probably have the car with me. But is there anything, I know that there's been a big discussion because on the one hand, alcohols, you know, zero lagers and zero stouts are being advertised in Croke Park and at sporting events. And there's one argument that says, isn't it great to see that the zero is being advertised and the zero is becoming more commonplace? And I don't want to use the word acceptable, but the zero is becoming more used in the pub setting. But on the other hand, someone is saying, no, they're not seeing the zero. All they're seeing is the name of the product. And what that's doing is effectively they're putting the name of the product into the viewer's mind, and they're not noticing the zero. Where would you fall in that debate?
Okay. I suppose in terms of, is there a health benefit to having a wider offering available? The jury's out on that. You know, it's not known. And a lot of people in the recovery community are talking about the fact that they would be triggered by zero alcohol products, and that if they were to drink, you know, zero alcohol that tastes like alcohol, looks like alcohol, thinks like alcohol, that that is a trigger for them in terms of wanting alcohol to drink. So I only know that anecdotally from people in recovery, from recovery groups, that they would be very concerned about that. So the second thing, I suppose, is there's absolutely no doubt that this is a form of stealth advertising. So what we have seen is governments across the world finally step up and take on the alcohol industry for, you know, very significant amounts of alcohol advertising. So, for example, in public spaces, alcohol is the most advertised product in the world. OK, bar none. The most advertised product in the world. So you have that. But what if you do research and say Alcohol Focus Scotland have done it, what young people see is the brand and not the product. So this is brand advertising for Guinnesses and all of those other ones. So, you know, for example, the GAA did great work around removing alcohol sponsorship of its jerseys, but we're now seeing Guinness Zero heavily branded and advertising. So it's this sort of wriggle room that people are doing. In the Nordic countries, what people have done is that they have banned the brand advertising, but our Public Health Alcohol Act only banned the products. So what the Minister for Health needs to do, and we've called on him and, you know, other organisations have called on him, is he needs to just introduce a very simple amendment to the Public Health Alcohol Act that says that the restrictions that apply to alcohol advertising should now also apply to alcohol brand advertising. And it's really clear if you walk into any supermarket here in Letterkenny across the county, the alcohol products themselves have had to be put behind, you know, gated areas. But straight outside of that, there's these very beautiful, very attractive, very large zero alcohol branded advertising that are happening. So when you walk into your supermarket, really what the government set out to do with the Public Health Alcohol Act with structural separation has been undermined. So we're still living in what are considered pretty toxic environments where the brands are coming at us all the time. So look, I think it's a space to watch, but I've absolutely no doubt that decisions are being made in boardrooms of global corporations that this is the way to circumvent the fact that governments are now bringing in regulations. And the reason governments bring in regulations is that they know that alcohol advertising works. It increases consumption in the population.
And the giving of it, and the caller has raised, now I've never thought of this, to be honest. What are your thoughts on the zero alcohol drinks being given to children?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely
not. It never even struck me, actually, that might be an issue. I just saw the question and thought, yeah, actually, I never thought of that, because presumably it's not illegal.
It's years ago since the Department of Health banned children smoking those little cigarettes, because what it was doing was it socialising and normalising what should be an adult and a prohibited behaviour to children.
And they were certainly in every shop when I was growing up, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a simple no.
Paula, thanks very much indeed. Food for thought, certainly. And the figures are there. And thanks indeed for taking part in the discussion today with Paula. In the meantime, thanks very much indeed.
Lovely. Thanks,
Paula. Paula, CEO there of Alcohol Forum Ireland. Paula, thank you very much indeed. It's Highland Radio, the 9 till noon show, 7 minutes to 11. Time for a break. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. A very important event coming up in Letterkenny on the weekend of the 18th to the 20th of August. That is Letterkenny Pride, and it's the first time we've had a Pride in Letterkenny, to my knowledge. I know we've had a very successful Pride in Buncrana recently, and there also have been Pride events in and around about Dunfanaghy and Falkara. This is the first one in Letterkenny. Joined in studio by two guests. I'm joined by Kelly Barry and by Pádraig Havlin. Kelly and Pádraig, both very welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks very
Hello,
much.
Thank you for having us.
Kelly, turning to yourself first, a good idea comes from a chat over a cup of coffee or whatever. What's the genesis of Letterkenny Pride?
It actually was over a beer, actually, in the cottage. Having worked in events, I had been having a conversation with my partner and we were discussing Pride and we thought, you know, it's time it happened in Letterkenny. And it kind of tumbleweeded from that kind of little idea and it's become something much more than we could have expected.
I mean, the Buncrana one first happened, it was just before COVID, if I recall it first happened in Buncrana, and that one was a huge success.
I mean, both, yeah, the Buncrana Festival and Broad na Gael Tuachta, wonderful jobs they've all done. And following the success of both those events, we definitely felt it was time that Letterkenny kind of jumped in and we showed our support to the LGBTQ community.
Pádraig, from your own point of view, I know you've been involved in various committees at work and so on, and you have taken very much a role yourself in the work context.
Yeah.
Important that carry on and that we have a Pride now in Letterkenny. And presumably, when we say Pride Letterkenny, that's going to stretch out. You're talking Letterkenny, Lifford, the Finn Valley, you're talking the Twin Towns. You know, it's not just Letterkenny. We're sort of spreading out.
Yeah, and it's reflective, I think, of a lot of the changes that have happened in Donegal in recent years, and it's really an opportunity for us to kind of help people understand the joy of being LGBTQ plus, having LGBTQ plus family, and just the fulfillment that can come from that.
The event, as we say, from the 18th to the 20th of August, I know there's a GoFundMe open and you've been doing a little bit of fundraising at the moment. And I saw a little post where someone was asking, well, why are you fundraising? And when it comes to organising events like this, it's not just a matter of, we'll put a few bands on in town and then stopping. There's an awful lot involved in the actual physical organisation, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a huge amount involved, and we've actually got a lot of support from businesses in the community, but there's still a lot of work to be done and still a lot of stuff to be organised, and Kayleigh kind of has a big handle on all of that. So what's all of that GoFundMe going to?
It goes towards things like equipment rental, insurance, getting the right people involved, certainly paying the entertainers, yeah, safety measurements, things like that, even merchandise. There'll be merchandise available on the day. Any excess funds that we raise will be going towards Breakout, which is part of the youth community, the LGBT. So, yeah, there's been a lot that's had to go into it, all the little details. And sadly, these things cost money, even down to cable ties.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, I mean, people will very much associate Pride with the idea of a parade. I presume we're going to have a parade in Letterkenny. We couldn't not, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. And we're inviting as many people to come out onto the streets and cheer us on. It's kind of the central element. Before the parade, we have some events down at the theatre, starting about 2 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah, 2:30 we start off at the theatre on Saturday the 19th. The parade will be leaving the theatre from 4:30. So we have 2 hours of entertainment, arts and crafts, face painting, lots of fun activities just to get people in the mood and in the celebratory vibe of the day, and then followed by the parade.
And I presume on the parade itself, allies and friends are welcome as well?
100%, yeah.
Because I know my own wife and one of her best friends were in Buncrana, and they just happened to go to Buncrana for a day trip when the first parade was on there. I don't think they even realised it was on. They both ended up walking in the parade because they met someone they know and they were chatting and they said, come on. And they actually ended up walking in the parade.
Well,
100%. That was wonderful. You know,
we are encouraging that. We want, you know, to show the LGBTQ community that they have a place here in Letterkenny. And that really does rely on a lot of our allies coming out and saying, you know, our business supports you, we support you, we're here to say we're proud of you too. And I think that's been a huge key element of what we're trying to do here. So please, absolutely, if you're an ally, please do come along.